Hello, 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 and welcome to Arts Underground. Guess what? If you put your ear to the floor, you'll probably be able to hear us better and from further away. How to find out if you're gullible 101. But this is a safe space because it's radio. Like, nobody can really tell what's going on anyway from the outside looking in. So don't be afraid to be yourself. Yourself is nice, and that's good enough for me. I'm Sarah Williamson. We've got a couple of features for you today, and then alternative music per the norm with some Dr. Dog and Dirty Projectors. But first, W.C. Handy and the perception of women after that. W.C. Handy was born in Florence, Alabama in 1873 to the pastor of a small church in Gunnersville. Handy's father believed that modern musical instruments were of the devil, so without his parents' permission, Handy secretly bought his first instrument, a guitar, which he saved for by picking berries and making lye soap. Well, his father found the guitar, and he asked W.C. what possessed him to bring such a sinful thing into their Christian home, and then he told him to take it back where it came from. However, the pastor soon after arranged for his son to take organ lessons, and W.C. Handy embarked on a rigorous education in music, eventually becoming the father of blues. This weekend, Friday through Sunday, Alabama Youth Ballet Theater celebrates the life of W.C. Handy with a program exploring the experiences and deep Alabama ties that shaped him as a musician, a businessman, and an advocate for the disabled. The show's choreographer and relative of W.C. Handy, Cynthia Handy Quintella, and the development chair of the AYBT board, Shauna Fox, sat down with me to discuss the event, the first question being, why the pairing of W.C. Handy and Swan Lake? Here they are.
So doing this tribute to W.C. Handy, it has been, like we always say, walking in his footsteps. It seems like we are living the life. It's an unusual thing I didn't expect to get from it. I got more out of doing the show than I ever did growing up, knowing about him. They already had planned to do Swan Lake early on, and when we got the grant for Handy, I really think that was looked at as just maybe one piece that represents. I don't think they realized that we could not do a tribute to W.C. Handy without
Telling his story. Right.
So
this became a bigger thing than Swan Lake, where originally it was supposed to be, I mean, literally like 12 minutes. It's 70 minutes now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. And when I'm saying this, we're talking back like summer of 2017 mm-hmm. is when that all happened. So there was a lot of evolution of it and not so much a... not so much an inspiration to put the two together.
Gotcha.
And I would hate to have use the word inspire and then have me have to correct it because, do you know what I'm saying?
It's kind of misleading.
Yeah, otherwise.
Because Swan Lake has really nothing to do with W.C. Handy.
Right, that's what I was wondering. I was like, that's why I wanted to ask. I was like, what?
Well, we kind of didn't, it's weird because we really didn't, we were thinking Swan Lake was the matinee and Handy was the evening show.
Yeah.
Which would have sounded really nice if we could have done it that way. But when they come, when you show up in the audience, you'll get a short preview of Swan Lake, and then intermission, and then we start the Handy show.
Nice.
So
we are a ballet company, and so it shows kind of the height of what
we are,
of what the ballet company can do.
But Handy has ballroom and blues and hip-hop and jazz and everything.
Contemporary, liturgical. Point ballet, flat ballet.
Yeah, it has every type of dance.
Yeah, that's why we call it Legacy of Dance, because there's this whole legacy of dance to his music.
Mm-hmm.
You can't decouple dance from his music.
Originally, what they had thought back in 2017 is I do a little thing for Handy. But you can't. Pay tribute to someone and just show just 10 minutes of what. You can't do it. You just can't. I don't know. So that's what our fight was.
Oh.
We fought.
Yeah,
for
you,
it.
You yeah. landed onto one of the first major conflicts of the program when we talk about walking in his footsteps, getting a ballet company to accept that they and believe mm-hmm. that they could do something so far outside of their typical lane.
Right.
It's been the inspiration, actually, is to see
the ballet company
just
growing out of their comfort zone. That would be the inspiration. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yes, we finally figured the connection.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
You may have gotten a different answer than maybe you wanted.
No. It was fine. I just, because it was like, this is a unique pairing. I wonder why, you know, obviously it was kind of a question in my mind, but I tried to see if I could find the answer myself. And I think this might have been like just a typo online. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to read his autobiography itself.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it says like that his development of the blues genre was influenced by some time that he spent in Clarksdale, mm-hmm. Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And he said in his autobiography that country folks there were like selling their original songs, which they called ballets.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah. And so I was like, is that what this is about? That's kind of, you know.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That she would, in a sense, his father wanted him to study classical.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. We have to let the audience know why the Swan Lake will be in front of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think what W.C. Handy did was formalized music. So he took something that was not classical and mm-hmm. formalized it to make it classical. Thank you, Sarah, because we are trying to figure out how do we tell the audience, okay, when you get there, it's going to be Swan Lake first.
Yeah.
That's been our.
Well, and actually, you know, you really hit on something because ballet is the classical foundational part of dance,
mm-hmm.
and everything else kind of grows from that foundational training, and it's the same with
classical music.
Classical
mm-hmm.
music,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's where Handy started, because of the rigorous academic training that he received. He was a classically trained musician.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he went out into the world and he saw all these other musical traditions, I mean, literally all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he drew from that, formalized it.
Yeah, he formalized music.
He analyzed what other musicians were doing in these, folk traditions,
mm-hmm.
I guess you would say. And formalized it and created a whole new form of music, the blues.
Yeah.
And I guess we're kind of doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
starting with our foundation of Swan Lake and then showing.
Mm-hmm. Them as equals. Like, this is just as mm-hmm. serious and
yes,
technically involved, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah, W.C. Handy was the type of a person that would not put down anyone. He was never above anyone. And the people he met, he was their equal, even though their lifestyles were different. And that's why he took music from Negro spirituals and slave songs. And he, because he was classically trained and knew how to compose music, mm-hmm. he formalized it by giving it some type of validation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's something that I've noticed this kind of parallel almost. It's a similarity anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So recently we went to the Howard Wieden House, and she is credited mm-hmm. with being the first person to accurately render the beauty and the humanity of African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, she took their beauty seriously, and then she put it on paper. And that's what I noticed that W.C. Handy seemed to do, because before then he was part of the, like, these minstrel shows.
Correct.
That took this the music, like you were saying, from, you know, spiritual and
slave songs.
Right. And then he really brought out the beauty of it. He took it seriously. He showed it respect.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the dignity and worth in
right.
all people.
Yes.
That's what was so important.
Yeah, I love that he was kind of, and that's why he's called the father of the blues.
Correct.
Because he was the first person to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to pay tribute to someone who, out of the love of the art of music, and it's nice to showcase something. I'm just standing on the, you know, I'm the dwarf standing on shoulders of giants because of W.C. Handy and his music, mm-hmm. everything else evolved from it. Everything.
Yeah.
And it's so important, his life. Right.
He also made it possible for other people who didn't have the resources that he had growing up. Like you said, he was heavily trained in music.
Mm-hmm.
And he founded the W.C. Handy Foundation,
right.
which gives resources and assistance to, I think it was...
Disabled children.
Right, yeah, disabled children mm-hmm. who were pursuing music. I thought that was really cool.
Right. Well, he suffered disabilities himself later mm-hmm. in life.
Right.
And he went blind... shortly after World War I, I believe it
right.
was. And he experienced that disability and that difficulty. And, of course, he had experience because he grew up in Florence, Alabama.
And across,
as a contemporary of Helen Keller.
Yeah, Helen Keller was in Tuscumbia, which is across the railroad.
Oh, wow.
And they became friends.
Yeah, they were aware of each other.
And
that's cool.
And so
they were in New York together when he went blind, and he went and talked to her a lot.
What? Where did you? I'm not sure.
She was in New York when he was in New York, and he, even though they're from Florence, well, how far is Tuscumbia? Not
well,
too far.
They're all down
across the tracks. So. Yeah. They were familiar with each other growing up, and then once he went blind, he went and talked to her in New York.
Yeah, and he saw the value of advocacy for the disabled. And, of course, you know, in that era, mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of the same resources for African-American children.
Right.
So he took that on as a cause
mm-hmm.
and used the example of Helen Keller to do that. Now, the W.C. Handy Foundation is still running. Carlos Handy is
mm-hmm.
the last surviving grandson of W.C. Handy.
Aww.
He's in his 80s now.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Houston, Texas. And we've been in contact with them throughout the process of creating this program. And they're very excited about what
they're
doing.
Very happy.
Very
they
excited.
Want W.C. Handy to represent and stay in Alabama. Everyone's trying to take W.C. Handy.
Everybody owns his.
Yeah, everybody has W.C. Handy to claim, but
right.
really
right.
they're happy that we are keeping him in Alabama and
That's
for the bicentennial and
right.
celebrating.
Because, you know, Memphis.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Has always embraced him.
He was their first international star.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
right. And so Memphis claims him.
And Mississippi claims him.
Mm-hmm. If you talk to people from Clarksdale, Mississippi, they all know about
And New York
Handy.
Claims him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They,
yep.
If you go to New York City and you talk about Handy.
He's buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And but Alabama has, we do have the Handy Festival, and that's important. What the Handy Foundation was excited about is that we're talking about Handy not only for his music, mm-hmm. but for all of the other things that he did, all of the other aspects of his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
His influence on dance,
mm-hmm.
for example,
mm-hmm.
was huge. And also his influence on advocacy for the disabled,
mm-hmm.
for African Americans. And
Well, let's talk about dance, since that's my area.
And right. being a businessman. He yeah. was a great businessman, too.
Right. He was a very good entrepreneur. He
but,
did.
But, yeah, dance was something that they were very excited that we were going to
because
talk about.
Back in the day, people couldn't dance unless they had music, and mm-hmm. WC provided the band and the music, and out of that were ballroom dancing. Mm-hmm. And from ballroom dances, every time they would play, WC Handy would play a certain song, they would do a certain dance, and the dance became the, what did he call it? The bunny?
They called it the bunny hug.
Which really turned into the foxtrot. So okay. he's responsible for the foxtrot. And tell, what was the other dances? Because of ballroom dancing mm-hmm. had to do with bands like WC Handy and music, and people don't realize, you know, he started a lot. He got the ball rolling for all types of dancing. And in this piece that we are showcasing, there's tango, because mm-hmm. he lived in Cuba. There's the foxtrot, and there's every type of dance. There's ballet, there's modern, there's contemporary, there's jazz, there's hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, music... And dance. Dance is what the hidden language of the soul, mm-hmm. and music is the universal language of the world. So,
oh, I love that. Yeah, and all of those dances were influenced by blues music.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah.
So I heard this one story, I don't remember it specifically, but maybe you do, where he kind of had this way of like sneaking in his signature blues style into his gigs. So I heard that once he started out with like a tango introduction, mm-hmm. and then he abruptly changed to blues. Mm-hmm. And he said he looked out at the dance floor and was, you know, afraid of what he was going to see, afraid of what might happen. And instead, all of the dancers were just electrified, and they kind of yeah. came to life, and they just threw up their hands. And do you know, you probably... If you know that story, you probably tell it better than I do.
Well, tell the story. I want Shauna to tell the story about being hired as a music director at A&M University.
Oh, yeah.
Shauna, tell that one.
Okay.
That's an interesting story.
let me address what she's talking about, because that's the Beale Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Beale Street song. And we actually have a little vignette in the... In the tribute
uh-huh.
about the event that you're talking about.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
So, because that was a fantastic story.
Sounds like a wonderful moment.
Yeah. Oh, the whole thing about Handy, he was really quite the character. I mean, he would have had to have been to do all the amazing things
right.
that he did.
Yeah.
And there are so many stories. And so Cynthia's wanting to talk about another fun little thing that
yeah.
he did at A&M.
Did something similar at A&M something. University.
He was just willing to do a few crazy things. He was mischievous.
He was a bit of a rebel.
Yeah, he was, yeah. So what you're talking about is, he said he tricked the dancers by arranging a tango introduction, breaking abruptly then into a lowdown blues. My eyes swept the floor anxiously, then suddenly I saw the lightning strike. The dancers seemed electrified. Something within them came suddenly to life, an instinct that wanted so much to live, to fling its arms and to spread joy, took them by the heels.
He's such a good writer,
yeah.
too.
He really was.
Yes, that's...
But he liked... Like you said, he was a character. The A&M incident, he got a job at A&M University
yeah.
as the band director, and... William Council was the president, and they felt, you know, you can help me because you're a great storyteller. he got hired as the band director, and he was also an English professor at A&M University.
He had received his teacher's.
Yeah, he was very well trained. Yeah,
man, that was
very smart man.
I heard that he passed that exam really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was the second highest grade in this state.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was very smart. I think Ragtime was. The music that was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
The president wanted classical music. He didn't want to. That was beneath educators in his mind, and W.C. Handy decided to, when they did their concert, he just couldn't resist, so he changed the name of the ragtime song that the band played, and was it a French name?
Greetings from Toussaint Louverture.
And making the audience think it was a classical piece, and when he played it, they all patted their feet, and they all loved it. And standing,
play it twice.
Played it twice, yeah. Wow. He had to do... standing ovation, and then at the end, he said, "I tricked you. I just changed the name to French. It wasn't classical.
It was called My Ragtime Baby.
It was really called My Ragtime Baby." And shortly after, he was released from Alabama A&M University.
So, as he put it, my time was short.
My time, yeah. As soon as he started fighting for American music, he was on his way out. That's what
right.
he said.
That's exactly right. Yeah,
he was very sneaky.
Yeah,
very
well, sneaky. It goes back to that original mm-hmm. theme that you were talking about. He saw value mm-hmm. and worth in every
art,
every art, mm-hmm. and he also, this goes back to the pragmatist and the businessman. Mm-hmm. He also knew that music was going to do better mm-hmm. financially if people just really, really liked it. Mm-hmm. And he knew that people really liked ragtime. It was just fun. And so he wanted people to see that they're the same thing that he saw, that even though mm-hmm. it's fun, mm-hmm. that doesn't make it less valuable.
Correct.
Right? It doesn't diminish it in any mm-hmm. way.
I just know the show that we're doing, the tribute to W.C. Handy, we call it The Legacy of Dance. It is so diverse. Mm-hmm. It's so energetic. The early ragtime, it's going to make you pat your feet. It's going to make you want to get out on the floor and dance. It really is.
Yeah, the show goes through the evolution of his, of the music that... Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this well, but it starts with the early music that he heard, mm-hmm. uh-huh. and then we take the audience through some of those early sounds
right.
that he heard, and it's it should be interesting to see how the audience uh-huh. reacts, because it starts with a Negro spiritual that he wrote, mm-hmm. and it's going to be performed by the Huntsville Spiritual Chorale.
Oh.
Which
we're looking forward to that. They perform at the Handy Festival in Florence as well.
The richness of mm-hmm. their chorale is just unbelievable.
The harmonies on those songs always just give me chills.
Yeah. And so that's where he started. And then we take the audience through to the tango Latin rhythms uh-huh. mm-hmm. From when he spent his time traveling in Cuba. And then we take the audience to Mississippi, where they get to hear a lowdown blues, and it's, when he describes it in his autobiography, he said it was the weirdest sound he had ever heard. And I think it's going to sound very strange to the audience too, considering the mm-hmm. music that they were hearing up to that, mm-hmm. will be hearing up to that point. But there's something so infectious.
He also
about
said that
music.
Music was like very haunting.
Yeah, it was.
Can you say that?
Yeah.
It was monochromatic. It was mm-hmm. a combination of, especially in Mississippi, lots of cotton towns and a lot of, we had a lot of slaves and mm-hmm. cotton pickers, and the songs they would sing were very monochromatic. It was kind of a wailing and a moaning, and he combined that with all the sounds that he heard and formalized it. And when he took the sounds that came from voices and made them into music notes, it turned out to be the blues. It's amazing that someone took the time to decipher, songs like that. I guarantee when you leave the show, first thing you will know the St. Louis Blues for sure. That song will stay in your brain. Second of all, you will definitely want to get his autobiography, because the man, W.C. Handy, was a genius. I cannot imagine all that he went through to get where he is today. And his music was so, it was internationally known. There, that particular song, the St. Louis Blues, they were, there was a story where some very, very prominent people went to Paris, and they were Americans. They were in Paris, and when they walked into a, I don't know, would it be a nightclub?
And, I think it was a concert.
Or something. There was a band performing, and when they realized that these were Americans, they said they played St. Louis Blues as if that was our national anthem. I mean, it was like they said, "You're Americans," and they broke out playing. This is in Paris, the St. Louis Blues, W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues.
Because that was the American song.
That's how internationally known he was.
Internationally, that was the song that was American.
That's incredible. That's like a Beyonce level
success. Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's right.
Kind of stardom right there.
That's right.
But, you know, out of W.C. Handy's blues, you had Elvis, you had, you know, all these, mm-hmm.
the whole genre
for rock and roll.
Well, his influence on jazz and even classical music. He talks about how some of the early musicians that he worked with, because they had not been trained formally on the instruments that they played,
mm-hmm.
they were doing things with the instrument that no classically trained mm-hmm. Musician would be doing.
That is true.
And
Because they were thinking outside the devil's box.
Mm-hmm. Well, they, right. Well, and they were just thinking, I want to make this sound.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the instrument, and they figured out how to make the sound. And you can credit a musician, a clarinetist, that Handy worked with for the glissade that the clarinet makes at the beginning of Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh.
That classical
mm-hmm.
glissade
mm-hmm.
at the beginning. The clarinet wasn't capable of doing a glissade like that with traditional fingerings, and it was a musician that Handy had worked with that showed them how to make the clarinet do that with non-traditional fingerings.
That's cool.
Yeah, and again, that's seeing the value in someone, the dignity of someone,
mm-hmm.
even regardless of their means and their and where they came from.
So before we go, I really do want to give props to Alabama Youth Ballet
mm-hmm.
simply for believing in us and going out on a limb, because it's a ballet company and the showcase is ballet, it is jazz, it is hip hop, it is contemporary,
mm-hmm.
it is ballroom, and we have so many of the community involved in this, because that's what Handy would have wanted, because it was for the community, the people. That's what he would have done. My cousin Ron Handy will be featured. He is a professional musician, and as well as, like I said, the Spiritual Chorale and the Huntsville Ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene, that's what I was going to say, Eugene Flemings. He's he is the spirit of W.C. Handy, and he is phenomenal. But of course, it's, you know, he's a professional. He's been on Broadway so many times, and so this says a lot for Alabama Youth Ballet, known as AYB, that they would just step out on a limb and let us have it. And I'm just so grateful and appreciative to being able to do that. Even the, you know, just to honor W.C. Handy, my family will be there. All the handies will be there. A lot of handies
from all over the country.
So I'm excited and a little nervous. To, you know, I want to make everyone proud. I want to honor him in an honorable way. So,
okay. Well, I think that concludes our interview. So, Shauna Fox and Cynthia Handy Quintella, thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Cynthia Handy Quintella, choreographer of W.C. Handy Blues Dance Legacy, with Swan Lake and Shauna Fox, development chair of the AYBT board. If you would like to catch the W.C. Handy performance, you can tonight. It starts at 7 o'clock at the VBC Playhouse. You can purchase tickets at the door, but if you buy them online, you can view and select your seats ahead of time. That's at alabamayouthballet.org. You can also catch AYBT's performance of Pinocchio and the Blue Fairy with Swan Lake Act 2 tomorrow at 2 p.m. also at the VBC Playhouse, and tickets are on that website at alabamayouthballet.org. Good afternoon, I'm Sarah Williamson. This is Arts Underground. Let's move on to the next installment of the Perception of Women series. Our panel is David, Amanda, Cynthia, and myself, all artists, as well as Ariana, artist assistant, and Christy and Krista, appreciators of art and subjects. We are talking about the traditional roles of women and how that's changed over time, how it's affected by marketed beauty standards, how it relates to health and trauma, such as injuries or pregnancy, and art. Could art that celebrates the human body be the answer? Just a warning, if you're uncomfortable with discussions about sex, tune back in just a few moments. But if you think it's an important aspect to the conversation surrounding the perception of women, welcome to being here and listen on.
I've been thinking this whole time because we're talking about desexualizing women's bodies and art, and at the same time I'm thinking, like, we also need to embrace the fact that women enjoy sex, you know,
right,
like,
absolutely.
Women are sexual beings, and that's fine. That's great, you know, like, I think that, yeah, we're coming out of, I mean, you know, 150 years ago, it was believed that women couldn't enjoy sex. I mean, that was, like, the leading scientific opinion of the time, and, I mean, into the early 20th century, and it's, I think that often systems, and specifically very, you know, we live in a pretty paternalistic governmental structure and have for a long time, that it has been used as a means of control.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about fear, I think that there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And rightly so. I mean, in a way, I mean, when I say rightly so, I mean, like, I definitely change the way I dress because I'm afraid of the reactions I'm going to get or the attention I'm going to get from different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean rightly so that it should be that way.
It kind of, it almost...
Self-preservation.
Self-preservation, mm-hmm. Exactly.
It almost perpetuates itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, women's bodies, you know, especially sexually, used to definitely be feared. Like,
mm-hmm.
It, you know, used to be a thing where... We're told that women's vaginas, like, could grow teeth.
Oh, yeah.
And that they, like, moved around their bodies. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's a movie.
I know, there's
yeah.
a movie. There's a movie.
I have not seen it.
But, like, there, and that, you know, they could even, like, bite off certain appendages. Like, you know, if you weren't careful. Yeah, it was, maybe it just started with men. Men were taught to fear, you know, women's bodies, or, you know, women were taught to fear their own bodies, or, you know, your body can't be trusted because it could hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's just...
That's why some societies wear robes all the way down past their ankles, because if they show their legs, then they are responsible for how the men react to that situation, you know. And it's terrible.
Yeah, when did I become responsible for your actions?
Mm-hmm.
That happens in schools here. You hear kids being sent home to change because the boys can't cope with what you're wearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that doesn't give the boys any credit.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah.
Rightly
it's kind
so.
Of insulting.
So it is.
Actually.
It's a weird, as the only guy in the room, it's kind of weird to, to speak to that. But yes, I have always been able to control myself.
Yeah.
Which.
Well, we're talking about teenagers and hormones going off the roof. You know,
I was still taught, though, what restraint is and respect is.
I was going to say respect.
Yeah.
It all goes down to respect.
Right,
I mean,
yes.
That's the bottom line. It's respect.
And if you teach children from the get-go, like you're doing, to, you know, respect the body and appreciate the body, and you normalize it, you de-scandalize it, you know, when those hormones hit, you don't really have so much of that, you know, because that, the... As of right now, this preconceived notion that, you know, oh my goodness.
A shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
A kneecap.
It's like,
Because really, that's you can't show shoulders in school. Right. You can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when I was in school, they sent boys home, too. They sent boys home if their shorts were too short. And because the, I mean, it's like down to your fingertips and then two fingertips after that. And you'd be surprised. Like,
I grew up in the wrong time.
They sent boys home. They didn't just send girls home, and I'm grateful for that.
My football shorts were really short.
I mean,
I'm not bragging or anything.
No, that's just what, that's all you could buy.
I think there's definitely something to be said for, like dress codes, even having uniforms at school. I think it's, it kind of... I mean, there's a wrong way to go about it. There always is. And this is off topic, but, you know, I think there's something really beautiful about kind of showing that respect for the education that you're getting. Does that make sense? You're really kind of like celebrating, you know, how special this is and, you know, the fact that not everybody has access
to
this.
We get to go to school.
Right.
You know, and that gaining knowledge is a beautiful thing and that we are very privileged to, and respecting that, kind of like when people dress up to go to church. It's them showing respect for the religion. However, I mean, it's also, you know, obviously biblical that, you know, if one man doesn't, you know, if he respects all the days of the week the same, let him do it. It doesn't matter. Everybody has their own way of showing respect to whatever it is they want to show respect to, and we should respect that. It has nothing to do with you.
There's a lot of, quote, dress codes that exist, but the context isn't really taught.
Right.
I mean, I know I've interviewed people who came for a job interview, and they obviously had no idea what to dress for that, where that works. So they hadn't done their research, so they weren't respecting where they were going. And some people judge you based on that, rightly or wrongly. Yeah. But I think teaching people there is a context to what you're wearing and not necessarily appropriate, but at least understanding this is the norm. And I don't know if that's right or wrong.
See, I have a hard time with all of this, to be honest. Equating respect with how you dress, I think, is kind of a concept that I struggle with, especially considering what the norm, like you said, like, again, who decides what this norm that we're following is? Like, what, you know, what, say, what class are they from? Like, what clothes can they afford? And then they're going to tell me that I have to dress a certain way to fit their expectation of what I should look like. Right. And especially if we're talking about women, and if we're talking about women in workplaces, we are held to a much higher standard with
it's
how we should dress,
too,
with
like
whether we should make
body types.
Wear makeup.
Yeah.
Right.
If you have, you know, large cleavage, if you have more of that, you should cover that up. You know?
Exactly.
But whereas a woman with a smaller chest, she can get away with like a lower neckline. And nobody cares.
Right.
And the temperature is set for men in most offices because they're wearing a suit and women are supposed to wear a sleeveless dress. And that's that seems sexist for one thing.
I dress generally like this at work. Sometimes I even wear Jordans to work. And I do not wear makeup. And I don't style my hair. It's either in a ponytail like this or it's just down naturally the way my hair curls. And I've spoken about that. I've been like, look, you don't have to put on makeup and do your hair every morning. Why should I? I don't want to. If I wanted to, totally fine. I don't want to. And there like are rare occasions in which I'm going to actually stop, take the time, and put makeup on. Or, I mean, I brush my hair, but that's like it. And I don't want to do anything else. And so I shouldn't have
to. You shouldn't have to.
And I have honestly been told otherwise. Like, no. Like, not about how I dress, but like, no, you should definitely wear makeup. I'm like, what?
I had a boss that used to tell me that all the time.
I don't think that's okay. And I've had lots of bosses over time be like, you should wear a little bit of lipstick.
Exactly.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
No.
So many times.
First of all, no.
But that is changing.
Also, thankfully.
As time is going by, it is changing.
I had a boss that would do that to me. She said, well, you know, if you would put just a little bit more makeup on, I think you'd be a little prettier. I really think you need to present yourself a little bit better. A female boss.
Yeah, half the time they're female bosses.
They're typically female bosses.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was always like very put together. I mean, you know, So anyway, yeah.
I love your face right now. She's like, what on earth?
The most that people can say, you know, if they're going to, you know, talk to you about your appearances, you know, you need to shower. I think that's
right.
The only
like you
thing
stink.
That people
can
say. Yeah. Like,
hygiene is important.
Yes.
Hygiene is one thing.
And that's it.
And
or,
right.
This happened, once.
Lipstick is not hygiene.
I get to a customer exactly site right with a new employee who's shadowing me, and his shirt was inside out.
let the guy know his shirt's inside out.
You can tell him that. And also, you probably... Yeah.
If you feel like they would want to know,
absolutely,
you know, then... but that should not extend to makeup or what you think that they should look like.
Right.
You know.
And some companies are embracing that. Like, mm-hmm. I used to work at an IT company in Nashville, and mm-hmm. we had a dress code. And,
yeah.
And then I worked for Apple, and Apple, you can go dress like this to an interview, and this is what the CEOs
nice.
Wear.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a dress code. They don't care, you know, what you
yeah.
wear. It's not about what you wear.
It's about the job that you do.
It's about what's
merit.
Inside. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly
so,
right.
So as we are constantly talking about it, mm-hmm. and circling back to what you were saying about
yeah.
your fear of things regressing,
right.
I don't think that can ever happen because we have social media, because everyone
true.
Has a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple outlets for their voice and mindset to be shared.
Right.
And that will never be turned off.
Right.
It's like ripples that just continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as long as we keep saying, this is not acceptable, this is not acceptable, you cannot
yeah.
tell me to put lipstick on, you know?
Yeah.
Like the pin, I don't know if y'all ever had to wear pantyhose to work. Mm-hmm.
Yes, girl.
Long time ago, yeah. You had to wear pantyhose with your
yeah.
skirt or whatever.
And heels.
Yeah.
And I think
mm-hmm.
the social media part is really good. I'm seeing a lot more of my female friends post what would have been considered like taboo even a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Very vulnerable posts, very talking about their health or their body or some
yeah.
aspect of their life that previously they would have been shunned for saying out loud. And now
mm-hmm.
they're sharing it, and the vast majority of the response is positive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, well done. I can't believe you did that. Now I'm humbled by that and I want to share.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that part of social media is brilliant, because women are taking control of what their voice is.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
That, and that's...